It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Man, it's good to have you here. I'm so glad to stop by. Welcome to Money for Lunch. This is going to be a spectacular show. I say that because we have San Francisco labor lawyers Norm Blumenthal in the house. I should say California labor lawyer Norm Blumenthal in the house. Going to be talking about some of the stuff that he's doing to protect you, working class stiffs like us who sometimes get run over by big companies, for lack of better terms, big labor, big companies for sure. We also have Perry Marshall stopping by today talking about how to increase your sales. So it's going to be a fantastic, fantastic episode. I think you're in for a real treat. Let's get it started right now. As I mentioned, my first guest today is our regular contributor, Norm Blumenthal. Norm Blumenthal, attorney for workers and consumers, selected as one of the top attorneys in Southern California, regular contributor on Money for Lunch. Norm Blumenthal, welcome back to Money for Lunch, man.
Thanks, Bert. Nice to be here. Had a big start of the election year yesterday, and I think the millennials are speaking loud and clear with their vote for Bernie Sanders. They're fed up with their student loans, low salaries, low expectations, and they're getting ready to vote. So we have to look at the election. Everybody out there, all you working stiffs, you have to look at your vote. You know, look at your vote as a vote for your pocketbook. Do you want longer hours with less wages and less jobs? Then you got a whole lineup of people to vote for: Trump, Cruz, and Rubio, and the rest of them, because all of them have subscribed to no increase in the minimum wage. They want basically lower wages, weak dollar, higher gas prices. That's what they want. And that's what you're going to get if you vote these Republicans in. So what we're here for, this is Money for Lunch. So we want to talk about how you working stiffs out there can make more money. And looking at the election is going to be the first way, because one thing we all have is the right to vote. So we have to look at that. And the election has taught us a lot. It's a start for the new year. So we have to watch what you're doing, because what we do in my firm is we represent employees in class actions who are working overtime without pay, working through lunch, working off the clock, working in underground economies that don't pay them even the minimum wage. This is the things we're seeing. And so our job is to put more money in the hands of employees, or people are going to spend it.
Let me ask you this. Let's talk about this, because your firm is currently involved in a class action lawsuit against Walmart. Let's talk about this. This has something to do with some managers or store managers alleged that they weren't paid their overtime. Talk about this class action that you guys are involved with.
Sure. What happens is there's a group of employees at Walmart. We represent a bunch of them. It's very difficult to get a class action certified. So we're actually representing Walmart employees that are classified as assistant managers in California. And basically, the law in California is that if you spend more than 50% of your time in a work week doing the same job as the people you manage, then you're not a manager. And what they have is they have these people they classify as managers, and what they end up being is they're glorified workers. They're salaried employees. So the purpose of classifying a person as a manager as exempt, which then makes you exempt from overtime, is you can work them 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and without paying them overtime for all the hours over 40 during the week or hours over 8 during the day in California. So when it gets crowded and you need more people on the floor, You use these persons to work for you and do the sales work, and you don't have to pay them overtime. It's a trick used by not just Walmart, but all these retail companies. use it. And they have a group of employees that they classify as, quote, assistant, end quote, managers. All they are is glorified sales personnel. And they use them to keep their wages down overall for their company. So you have a budget for how much you're going to spend for labor. And to keep you in the budget, you have these assistant managers that are the flex people that you can work overtime. And most people don't even want to be classified as an assistant manager because they know they're not going to receive overtime pay. So that's
right.
The case against Walmart, and we're signing people up. They, you know, call into our firm, and we are taking people individually in that case. We're having what's called a group action. And as we sign them up, we take them in, and we end up filing group claims against Walmart for these persons. So,
I want to clarify this because
sure.
You in the beginning you said that what a lot of these stores do, and we're talking specifically about Walmart in this particular case, is that they'll take somebody who's going to spend. I think you said they'll spend 50% of their quote manager duties doing what a non-manager worker might do, which might be out there, we'd call it working the retail floor, folding clothes, interacting with a customer. Meaning, if they're spending 50% of their time not being a manager, they're not really a manager. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. If you spend more than 50% of your time in any given work week, for that week, you're no longer a manager. And so, and what they do this, they do it all the time. You know, they're stocking the shelves, they're doing the same work that the people underneath them, and Walmart's not the only one.
Right.
They have cases against Nike and other stores too. Nike, they call them the assistant coaches. You know, they do the same thing. You know, because they think they're in playing football or something, and they do the same work as the people on the floor. It's the same concept, and it's pretty rampant in the retail business. It's a trick they use, in banks, and use it. And it's across the board, and this allows them to keep their payroll levels at the local level in line with the management level, what they expect to pay for payroll. Otherwise, they'll have to, if they comply with the law, they'll be paying overtime work when it's busy, and this they don't want to do. And they can't judge when it's busy or it's not going to be busy. You know, it's hard to figure out. So they have these persons there that are available to work where they don't have to pay them. And it's common across the board. And so this is what we're trying to protect the working stiffs from having happen. The why I bring up politics all the time is because there's regulations that we have that the courts follow. In deciding whether or not you are entitled to overtime pay or not. And under the Bush administration, these regulations were rewritten to protect the employer. So it was very difficult to have a person classified as an employee. Under the Bush way of doing it, everybody was a manager, everybody was an administrator, everybody was an executive, no matter how far down the food chain you were. And now with President Obama coming in, his administration has finally passed regulations that are going to tighten these overtime restrictions, narrow the overtime exemption, and end this wage theft. Because at the end of the day, the employer, it's wage theft. They're stealing
right.
money. They're stealing money from the employee. And the only way this is going to stop and bring it to a real end is to have people in office who are going to be pro-employee, not pro-employer. And you're kidding yourself if you think it doesn't make a difference with the way you vote. So
here's the thing. Today, I think more than ever, we have seen such a great division. You brought it up. You have several people, including Donald Trump, who is basically saying, "Hey, we need." We need to suppress the minimum wage. We need to be pro labor, for lack of better terms. And that, you know, for most people, that's offensive. Now, yes, you know what? I think that you and I, everybody who owns a company, We want to hire the best people we can and pay them what they're worth. However, just like a lot of the laws and statutes that we have here in America, we should also stand up for those people who cannot stand for themselves and say, hey, if you're going to work an honest day's work, you should get paid an honest day's dollar. Now, whether that's, you know, $10 or $15, who knows? But, you know, bottom line is you can still go to your job. Even at $10 an hour, most people can't live on that. $15 an hour, you're breaking even. I mean, you and I have talked about the fact that in most of the states, you need a minimum of, you know, 50 or 60 grand for two people and one kid. You need 50, 60 grand just to break even.
Yeah, and if you, that's a good point, because if you don't break even, Bert, who picks up the tab? It's the taxpayers pick up the tab.
Right.
We pick up the tab with the earned income tax credit. We pick up the tab with food stamps. We pick up the tab with subsidized housing. We pick up the tab with Medicaid. And so at the end of the day, the taxpayers are picking up the difference. We subsidize the companies.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned we were talking about Walmart today. But Walmart, I think, is a great example. Here's a company that pays their employees, doesn't necessarily pay. This is more about the hours. They try to put as many employees on part-time so they don't have to pay health care. They also go to the government to get tax credits. They go to the government to get subsidies. And their employees who are only working part-time and getting minimum wage sometimes have to get two or three jobs. And, as you mentioned, welfare assistance or some kind of government subsidy. And yep. If you're Walmart, come on.
Yeah, you know, and that's what it is. And it's all about how much money they can have, you know, for their shareholders. What's the bottom line? And at the end of the day, it's as I said, it's an adversary system in America, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
It's an adversary system, and we know that Walmart's going to try to keep its labor costs as low as it can, which they should do because that's their job. But at the same time, we need to elect people into office that are going to help the laborers, the workers, to pass laws that are going to protect them from what the employer is going to do for his job. So this adversary system is only going to work for the worker if the worker gets out and votes for persons to come into office who are pro-labor, who are pro-employee, who are going to increase the minimum wage, keep fighting for lower oil prices, keep fighting for a higher dollar, and, you know, they can create these enterprise zones in cities where employers can take advantage of some tax credits. So this is where we're headed. There's really sharp division, and the scare tactics of the Republicans, Trump, Cruz, Rubio, with the immigrants, and it's all nonsense. These are people that come to the country, work hard, try to get ahead. 99.999% of them are great, and we need to help them make more money, because when they make more money, they're going to spend it. We talk about velocity of money all the time. And velocity of money the purpose of it is you have to have that money rolling over again and again and again, and that increases the buying power for everybody. It puts money in the hands of those that will spend it. You know, the millionaires and the billionaires, they can't spend what they got. But the minimum wage worker and anybody making, you know, $150,000 or less each year, he's going to spend everything he's got. And so that's where we want to concentrate getting the money. That's where we want
Absolutely.
The money to go.
Absolutely.
That's our job is to make sure that everybody's getting paid for the work they're performed at the highest wages they can. And we do it two ways with our firm. We enforce the laws, but at the same token, everybody out there, you're the ones that are going to hire the people who are going to make the laws. And so we're in an election year, and this year is what we have to concentrate on, is getting people in office who are going to be pro-employee. And right now, those are the Democrats. So wherever you are, vote a Democratic ticket. It's coming up. And, register to vote. Whatever you do, vote. And let's put people in office who are going to be pro-employee, going to increase the wages for all the workers and narrow the exemptions from overtime and put in a position where everybody's going to benefit.
Absolutely. You mentioned something, and I wanted to go back to it, and that was the student loans. If people don't understand this, that they're probably not aware, but you know, the cost of tuition nowadays, I think, has skyrocketed. I think in the last 10 years, tuition is like doubled or tripled in some cases. It is skyrocketed, but our wages have not. The amount of employers who are hiring have not. So you have these kids coming out with $50,000 to $200,000 worth of debt and no way to pay it back.
Well, you know, there's laws that are being proposed by Democrats in Congress. They're sitting on the books because they don't have the majority, one of which is treating student loans like they treat health insurance. Basically, the employer can you get a job, you have a student loan, the employer can pay off your student loan with and get a deduction for the payment, and you don't have it as income. And then, you know, it's a win-win. He pays off your loan, you can work for him for less because he's paying off your loan. That's sitting in Congress. That hasn't been passed because that's a Democratic bill. Another one is to change the what's called the amortization schedule for the loan. Instead of making the loan where they amortize it interest and then principal, you switch it around and you amortize it principal and then interest. That reduces the overall payments by about 40%. Those two laws alone, plus no prepayment penalty, which allows you to go out and get a loan for less interest right now, those three laws alone are sitting in Congress, proposed by Democrats, and they'll never see the light of day until we have a Democratic majority in Congress, and that's going to cost the taxpayers nothing. It'll allow all people with student loans to get their loans paid off faster with less dollars, and at the end of the day, put more money in people's pockets, have the employees have better workers, more happy workers, satisfied workers, and loyal workers. Because obviously an employer who pays off a student loan for an employee, he's going to be one that the employee is going to want to stay with. So these
Absolutely.
Are all things that can happen that aren't happening.
Absolutely. Norm Blumenthal, it's always good to have you on the show. If you guys are having questions, if you're having problems in your work environment, you want to talk to somebody, reach out to Norm Blumenthal and his team at BAM Law CA. That's BAM, B-A-M Law CA.com. Norm Blumenthal, the protector of the working class stiff. Thank you so much for stopping by today.
Sure, Bert. Have a great day. Take care.
All righty. Good stuff there from Norm Blumenthal. You know, guys, to me, it's not so much about Democrat or Republican. It's really about who's going to serve your interest best. For many, many, many years, I was a diehard Republican until they got in bed with the insurance companies and they started pushing tort reform and taking away our rights. And then I said, you know, I don't want to be a Republican anymore. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. Now I just try to vote for who's going to serve me and my family best. Who's going to serve America best? Maybe that's the way it should always be. We're going to be right back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. Man, this is good. Marlon Williams is not your average career, life, business coach. She is a pioneer and visionary who has experienced tremendous success as a key leader in helping create culture that grew a $12 million company to a $2.3 billion global corporation, which sold to a Fortune 500. She intuitively knew she was meant to do more in this world and went to create her own legacy by building her own success coaching business. Her extensive leadership experience includes strategic planning, human resource management, project management, marketing, and business ownership, making her uniquely able to understand and address issues across a wide variety of people, teams, and organizations. Marla Williams, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. Excited to be here.
You bet. You bet. Let's talk about this. So you were working for this company, and you went from, I guess, a corporate environment to a coaching environment. What was the trigger that got you from, you know, leaving your corporate environment to going into coaching?
Well, in my corporate environment, which I loved, it was a phenomenal company to work for. We grew and did a phenomenal job building an outstanding culture. But the company changed when it sold. You know, you build
Sure.
a culture based on the leaders. And when the leaders leave, the culture changes. And it was no longer a great fit. And I saw what we had done so successfully. And I knew that on my own, I could go out and create my own legacy. So I went into business for myself. It was a big adjustment, but I built it, and it's going extremely well, and I love it. And to me, you know, the legacy we built at my company, as well as the legacy I'm building today, just makes such a difference in the world.
I love it. I love it. Let's talk about this real quick, because legacy is one of those big, I don't know, kind of a big word. You know, it's awe-inspiring sometimes. Legacy, you think about, in a lot of cases, you think about somebody who's passed on. So let's talk about this. What does legacy mean to you, and have you created one?
So I everybody in this world wants to feel like their life was important
yes.
and that they made a difference and that they will be remembered. I mean, everybody. And, you know, we all think of the big players, the John F. Kennedys, the Steve Jobs, but in reality, each and every one of us in this world can make a difference. And legacy is really simple. It's about life and living. You know, you learn from the past and the people that walked before us. They've left their legacy. We learn from them. We live in the present and we start building for the future. And the world stays connected. And, in fact, you had a great guest on your show yesterday. I think it was – is it Riley Forbes? Or Forbes Riley?
Forbes Riley. Yeah.
And she talked about the power of story. And the world stays connected through stories, traditions, legacies that are passed down. And if you think about it, you know, families, companies, communities tell stories to their youth. The elders share stories. And that is how people leave legacies. And everyone in this world is capable of leaving a meaningful and powerful legacy. The second part of your question, so that addresses what legacy means to me. It's about just leaving a story. And I have. I created one. I was so fortunate to be part of this great small company that had amazing leaders. And when I came into the company, they said to me, we just want to have the most amazing company in the world. And my first job as a human resource manager was actually phenomenal because I had to go out and interview who I thought were the coolest companies in the United States and talk to the presidents and learn what they were doing and really tune into what they were doing to be known as such a great company. And I came back to my company with all these stories and all these programs and all these ideas, and we sat down and talked about our own values and principles and how we wanted to build those into our company. And so much of it, I've got to say, is based on the leaders and how they are, how they act, how they think. And we sat down, wrote our principles and our values, and we created a game-changing culture that lived on for years. In fact, people still come up to me. I was at a Chamber of Commerce meeting, and a guy walked up to me and he said, I don't know if you remember me, but you hired me back when, and I just want to thank you for changing my life. And that's the kind of legacy you want to be remembered for. You want to be remembered for changing lives or making a big impact on someone else's life. So when I left the corporate world, I knew I still wanted to keep making a big imprint on the world. And with my HR background and project management and leadership jobs that I had in the corporate world, I knew that I could create a coaching business where I could help people, other companies and other people, create and leave legacies. And I've got to say that there's nothing more rewarding than knowing I'm making a big difference every single day in the lives of so many, whether they're getting out of stuckness and overwhelm or just really wanting to figure out their purpose to move on. But, you know, recently I had a really high-level corporate leader that I'm working with tell me, I exponentially change her life every time I'm on the phone with her. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's very cool. Absolutely. You know, having somebody come up to you and say, hey, thank you for hiring, you changed my life, that is, you know, that's fulfilling. That's got to be, you know, awe-inspiring. Most people don't get to have that experience. Most people who get hired certainly don't walk around saying, wow, this person changed my life, working in this environment changed my life. So let's talk about that. Well, real quick, what was the name of the company? Was it Zappos by chance?
No, it wasn't. It was actually a small company that made in the manufacturing industry. It was called Genie Industries, and it got bought out when we grew. It got bought out by a company called Terex. And Genie made lifting equipment. When I first joined them, it was just aluminum products, and we built into the big steel ones, the big blue lifts to put people in the air to do construction. You see them on bridges, you see them on buildings, So most people from that company that were early Genie are saying things like, you know, they used to say, I bleed Genie blue. That's how dedicated everyone was. That was the culture that we had. And still today, when I run into people that were Genie, we still have this connection of the legacy that we created when we grew this company together.
That's amazing. I like that. It reminds me of some of the individuals there that started Federal Express. There's that group, that core group that started FedEx, who went through all the pain that FedEx went through. And to this day, for those who, most of them are retired, but there's, I think, a couple left that are still from the old crew, that legacy crew, if you will, who still have some checks that were returned unpaid because FedEx didn't have enough money to pay them and their payroll checks bounced. And so they have these, you know, there's this, you know, what do you call it, this core, this special core glue that holds this team together. These are the guys who grew the company from zero to, you know, whatever it was, multi-million dollars before the FedEx exploded. And again, part of that connection that this group has is the fact that they all went through this stuff together, and they were there for the bad times, and then they got rewarded in the good times. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about lasting legacy. I understand that you have four steps to creating a lasting legacy. Let's talk about all four steps.
Okay. So the first step is, in my mind, the most important, and that's where you have to start with the end in mind. What do you really want to do? What do you want to be remembered for? What do you value? What's important to you? You know, what's so vitally important to you that you feel it in your heart? And what can you do about it? How can you make a difference? And so when I'm working with people, I often take them through the process of there's three different little tools that I use. One of them is put yourself in the shoes of an 80 or 90-year-old, and I want you to visualize looking back at your life, and I want you to tell me what you want people to say. You know, what do you want to be remembered for? What are the words you want to be hearing as an 80-year-old? What do you want to be talking about and telling your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids about your life? And so putting yourself in the shoes of an 80- or 90-year-old person and looking back at your life is extremely powerful. Oftentimes people say, you know, if you're at your funeral, what do you want people to say? You know, oftentimes people, you know, they work really, really, really hard. They work 40, 50, 60 hours a week, but what are they doing, and are they feeling fulfilled, and are they feeling gratified, and are they feeling like they're truly making that difference that somebody's going to want to talk about funeral, or are they just going to say, yeah, they burned themselves out and died of stress? And so it's really, really important. Seriously, what are you doing in your life where people are going to stand up and say, wow, look what she did. She stood up, or he stood up, and he did this. You know, another powerful exercise is pretending like you're walking down the hall, and you're walking into a great big venue, and it's full of all your friends, your family, your coworkers, and people that have loved you your whole life, and you're getting recognized. And visualizing yourself sitting in this seat while everybody's standing, coming up to the stage and talking about you. And what are they saying? You know, when you can go through that kind of exercise, it gives you a real idea of what you want and how you can make a difference. Because everybody has a purpose in this world. They're all here for a reason. And it's a matter of really tuning into what that is for yourself.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I like what you said there. First of all, you want to start with the end in mind. And I think that sometimes a lot of us have a difficulty figuring out what that is. But when you start thinking of yourself as, you know, this person who is, you know, on in years, 80, 90, whatever, or in a funeral scenario or whatever, what do you want people to say about you? What achievements do you want to do or be known for? That puts you in a different light, because you don't want to be known for the guy, you know, who worked 50 hours a week and then died. There's no legacy there. I mean, you want to be known for the person who, you know, helped with the schools or mentored children or mentor, you know, whatever. You know, what is it you want to be, you know, what is it that you want to do? I think that's a great way to start that, with the end in mind. All right, so what's step number two?
So the next step is, I lead people, once they really figure out their purpose and what they really would get fulfillment from and what really means a lot to them, is who do they know? What are their strengths? What can they do to help them move from step A to step Z? You know, who else can contribute to the project? Who else can help you? You know, I think you've had, and I've listened to your shows for the last couple of days, there's a lot of people, is having a coach is important. Having a mentor is important. Having someone who can help you walk through the steps of getting your purpose, your meaning, your life calling from a thought into action. And so it's gathering those resources. It's when I was at Genie, when I first joined them, and there were 100 employees and they were a small company, it was just a real backyard operation. I went out and I interviewed leaders at different companies, and that was powerful. I didn't just sit there in a room in our part of the world and look at what we were doing, but I went out and looked at what the world was doing and what things really spoke to me. And then I brought back story, again, the power of story. And then we sat down and really talked about how we could take those stories and make them into, in our belief system and our values, and make it into who we were. So we could go and implement it, communicate it, walk our talk, and be that.
No, I like that. Yeah. It's, you know, it's interesting. When you talk about legacy, again, as we've already kind of discussed, you really think of somebody who is, you know, lifetime achievement as a legacy or something like that. Again, somebody who's older. But really, you have to start to plan for that now. You really do, because time goes by so quickly. Anybody who's been around 40 or 50 years realizes how quickly time goes by. And if you don't plan for a legacy, chances are you're not going to leave one.
I think everybody leaves a legacy. It's just how meaningful it is.
Yeah, thank you. I like that.
I have a little story on that. My mom asked me when she was in her late 70s if I would help her write her life story. She didn't have that amazing life that is going to be a major legacy like a, you know, Martin Luther King. But she knew she wouldn't live forever, and she wanted her grandkids and her great-grandchildren to know about her. So I helped her write this book, which we gave to all the family members for Christmas. But shortly after finishing the book, Mom was diagnosed with cancer. And she went through chemo, and it almost killed her. So she made a decision to stop. So in December of 2013, the doctor gave her 2 months to live. She lived 9. And the reason why is because the first thing we planned as soon as she had the death diagnosis is we planned a celebration of life party for her 80th birthday. We had 200-300 people show up at this, friends, family, people from all parts of her life, from when she was a baby, every stage of her life. They all came, and we spent an amazing afternoon in a beautiful location with all of these amazing people talking about my mom, kind of like I described in that thing. They told their memories, their stories. I learned things about my mom I never knew. So beyond after writing this book with her, I learned what a remarkable woman she was and began to realize that her legacy reached much further than we as her kids ever imagined. She was a connector of people. She was a tour guide around the world. She spent her life bringing people together and making a difference. And she passed away happy, and it was so easy to write her obit after all of that. I have to tell you that it was amazing. So everybody leaves a legacy, whether you really set out. If you want to intentionally leave a legacy that's really meaningful to you, which hers was, you can go through the process I'm talking about. But you can also do it by documenting who you were and what you did and leaving that legacy, passing it down to your own family, if nothing else.
Yes. No, you know what? I'm so glad you said that, because a lot of people feel that maybe they didn't make their mark on the world. Great story about your mom. I think sometimes moms are overlooked. I think they're such a powerful and special people. Sometimes our parents are overlooked. My father-in-law, person I respect quite a bit. Here's a guy who went to work, was very much frugal with his means. He put 7 kids through college. He did a lot for them, and he's still out there giving to the community. He's a very active individual. His wife has passed on about 6 or 7 years ago, but my point being is that he's always one of those individuals that just quietly goes about doing good. And sometimes because you quietly go about doing good, people don't know about you or hear about you, but it doesn't mean you stop that. So this idea of a legacy, I just love this mindset. Okay, so we've talked about step one and step two. Where do we go from here?
Well, the next step, once you know your vision, you know your resources, is you have to have a roadmap or a plan. You know, if mm-hmm. I'm heading from Seattle to Tennessee, I got to know how to get there. And so that's one of the things that the people struggle with a lot, trying to figure out how to get from A to B. And every single person, every company, every situation is unique, where you can sit down and start figuring out, okay, so if I did this, so this is what the end result looks like. And if I'm here today, what are the steps that are missing? Putting in the actual steps of what you're going to do to get from here to there, and they can be baby steps. That's the biggest
sure.
thing. People think, oh, my God, I got to do this big thing, or I've got to launch this big company, and you don't. A lot of times it's baby steps, and it's just really starting to live your life authentically and being who you truly are and figuring out all the steps you need to do to be able to get that. You know, stop working 60 hours a week. Start breathing and noticing the world around you. Start, breathing. Whatever it might be where you get more in the zone of who you are and more connected with yourself and out of the busyness of the world and out of your head, that's where you can really start to put the pieces in place to get you from where you are today and where you want to be. And this is where a good coach, a good
mentor.
Mm-hmm. And, a lot of that is, like you said, I think that you said this on another show, is calling up and asking, pitching yourself,
yes.
and, hey, I could use a mentor. So, yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what? And I like this idea. You mentioned baby steps. And I want to point this out, that baby steps are still steps. We all learn, we all learn to walk by stumbling around, taking our baby steps, right? And by chunking it down and making these small little, sometimes even a small step can be a scary step, but making small step towards that worthwhile dream is those, leads you to success. And so maybe a step could be, instead of working 60 hours a week, I'm going to get down to 50 hours a week. Or I like your other idea, something as simple as being aware and being grateful and just breathing, just taking time to breathe and meditate. That in itself could do wonders for you. And sometimes, again, it's one of those simple things that we overlook.
That in itself is life-changing. I have so many
yes.
clients that have come to me completely overstressed, overwhelmed, ready to just walk out on the world because they just can't do it anymore. They're working 60, 70-hour weeks. They're trying to juggle family. They're trying to juggle everything. In fact, I was in that situation at one time, and I learned how to
sure.
overcome stress and overwhelm and that type of thing. So it all of us have that in our lives, and learning how to just tune into the moment is big in overcoming stress and overwhelm.
Absolutely.
And so that you can work towards your legacy.
And this stress, I like to call it the stressed lifestyle, is a learned
mm-hmm.
is a
yeah.
learned thing, right? I mean, you and I didn't go to college and say, okay, guys, this is how you live stress. This is how you work when you walk around with stress all around. No, you go to the corporate world, and man, everybody's stressed. And talking about stress is cool, and working 50, 60 hours a week, man, you're really doing something, and sacrificing your health and your family. Well, you're really committed. And then you realize,
yeah.
oh, wait a minute, that's not me. That's not what
yeah.
I want to do. That's a bunch of crap. All right, so let's go on to step number 4. We're running out of time.
Okay, so just briefly, it's then making it happen. You've got to just enact it. once you have the plan in place, just do it one step at a time. But I want to dovetail, if we just have a quick minute, dovetail off what you said, is, you know, you don't grow up, you grow up and you learn stress, you're right, because you grow up, you know, you're born happy, very intuitive, very in tune to the outdoors and the birds around you and anything that goes around you. And as we try to get in line with what the culture expects, you know, follow the rules, get in line, get the degrees, get multiple degrees, work hard, work it, you know, that's when we start losing it. It's when we just push too hard and trying to prove yourself and be everything to everybody that you actually lose touch with who you truly are. And what I do is just get people back to who they truly are. And you can still be successful, you can still be powerful, you can still work in a high-pressured job, you just change how you're doing it.
I like that. I like that, yeah. All right, so step number four, real quick, is doing it. Is that what you said? Just getting out there and doing it. And ultimately, it all is pulling the trigger. You got to take action sooner or later. Action, you know, is involved no matter what you do, whether it's, you know, building, building a legacy or building a business or whatever. Ultimately, action is required.
Or building a building.
Mm-hmm. Building a building. Marlo, we're out of time. It's good to have you on the show. We'll bring you back another time. Thank you for stopping by today.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You bet. Good stuff there from Marlo Williams about the four steps to building a legacy. And Perry Marshall is going to be joining us here momentarily. He's going to help you build a different kind of legacy, just as important, right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
It's just so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Perry Marshall. Perry Marshall has been on the show before. It's been a while. It's good to have him back. Perry Marshall is one of the world's most expensive and sought after business consultants. Clients seek him out for capacity to integrate many disparate fields, engineering, biology, chaos theory, mathematics, physics, art and psychology. He has launched two online revolutions in the pay-per-click advertising. He pioneered many of today's best practices and wrote the world's best-selling book on internet advertising, The Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords. More recently, he applied the 80-20 principle to more facets of business than any other author, being the first to expand the 80-20 as an infinite fractal law of nature. 80-20 is the central lever for nearly every profitable strategy in sales, marketing, and business. His book, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, is required reading in many growing companies. Works also include the best-selling Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising, Evolution 2.0, Breaking the Deadlock Between Darwin and Design, and Industrial Ethernet. Perry Marshall, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. It's really great to be here. You know, I was enjoying your previous guest, and I was just thinking about how, you know, we develop these habits of just kind of thinking we're supposed to be stressed about everything. And, you know, that's an especially bad thing when you're in a stressful situation.
That's right. Well, you know what? It's amazing. It's amazing what we what we learn once we get out of school and stuff like that. It's just, you know, we have all these things, and it just takes, at least it took me a while to realize, you know, this is just a bunch of crap. You know, I'm just as effective at 40 hours as I am at 60 hours. I'm probably less effective because now I'm kind of, you know, whiny and moany and bitchy a little bit, and I don't want to be here anymore and all that other stuff. And I think that's one of the reasons I like the concept here of the 80-20 book, the 80-20 Sales and Marketing. It's the definitive guide to working less and making more, because I think that 80-20 is one of those things that we hear about, but it isn't really taught, I think, the way it should be. I think that your book does a fabulous job of helping people understand that you can apply 80-20 to everything. I mean, you apply it to not just marketing, but to hiring. You apply it to everything that has to do with business.
Yes. It's really not taught. And let me offer a little bit of forgiveness for the people that don't teach it very well. You know, 80-20 is everywhere. It is, I mean, you go to the beach and get a bucket of sand, I guarantee you the size of those sand grains, 80% of the space is taken up by 20% of the sand grains. And it's true of craters on the moon, and it's true of everything you can that you can measure in a business. Now, your teachers don't teach it to you in school, because they want everybody to learn these certain lists of things that somebody arbitrarily, you know, decided that everybody's supposed to know. And, you know, God bless them. They're doing their best and everything like that. And we're trying to make sure everybody gets 3 square meals a day. So that's okay. But you know what? People do not realize how unequal the world is. And business is all driven by inequality. Okay.
Absolutely. Well, you know what?
Entrepreneurship? It's taking things from low value to high value. So that's finding the inequality.
Right. And listen, we've all been told that life is unfair. Well, you know, and that's all you kind of, that's all you ever hear. Well, life's unfair. That's just the way it is. Well, it is the way it is. 80% are gonna end up sharing that 20%. 20% of the people are gonna control 80% of the wealth. It's just, you know, that's the way it is right now. What, you know, back to what you were talking about, these teachers, some of them, you know, obviously some of these teachers, professor, what do you want to call them? You know, they're sincere. They write this big book, which they make you pay so they can now talk about it in their class. This is the way they get validated. You know, this is the way they've been taught to be validated. As you become a professor, you write this book, you teach from the book, and then every year you come out with a new edition, so you have that royalty money coming in. But what I like about the 80-20 is that, you know, it is part motivation. There's a chapter 3 starts off with you can do it better. But it also breaks down to, you know, if you're a numbers guy, a nuts and bolts kind of guy, there's a lot of numbers in here. There's charts, there's graphs, there's a lot of stuff that you back up with hard data.
Well, you know, if I could say anything about 80-20 that I hope everyone would remember, it is that inside every 80-20 is another 80-20, and then there's another one, yes, and another one, and another one. And this is so powerful. So let me just give you a really practical example of that. If we look at the population of the whole entire world, we look at 7 billion people, it's a fact, 20% of them make 80% of the money. And no legislation or presidential elections is ever going to change that. It is the way it is. But we could look
right.
We could look at the Forbes 400, and it's 80-20 still true when we look at the Forbes 400. We could look at the top 10 richest people in the world, and it's still true on the top 10 list. So it's true if you go to a parent-teacher meeting tomorrow at your kid's school, 80-20 applies to the people that are sitting around there in the room. It's absolutely everywhere. And so you can't change it. what you can do is harness it, right? Now, here's the thing, and this is very counterintuitive. If people follow their 80-20 and harness the inequality, what it actually does is it makes more wealth for everybody. There's never been a time in the world when more people weren't getting 3 square meals a day. In fact, it's really easy to tell. A lot of people get like 5 square meals a day, right?
Yeah, so, I was about to say, in America, they're getting 5, 6, sometimes 7. I'm just kidding.
Right? There's more than enough to go around. Okay? Like this whole scarcity thing, there's enough energy, there's enough water, there's enough food, there's enough opportunities. It's really that anxiety of clutching things and hanging on to them that actually your last guest was talking about. It makes people blind to, hey, you know, I've never seen a business where there wasn't some either, okay, so let's say you're talking about customer service problems and defects and stuff. I've never seen a business where it couldn't be improved by getting rid of something, including customers. Get rid of that customer. My friend Len Bertain has this thing. It's called the 21-20 rule of profitability. 120% of your profit comes from 20% of your customers, and then the bottom 20% of your customers knock it down to 100.
Say that again. Okay, so 120% of your profit comes from
20% of your customers.
Okay.
Okay. Like, and then there's a part of your customers that are really profitable. But there's this other 20% that suck up all the extra profit that your good customers made because you're actually losing money. Most people are losing money servicing 5, 10, 15% of their customers. If they got rid of them, their profit would go way up. So some days you feel like, man, like, the harder I run, the tireder I get. The more I sell, the harder it is to meet payroll. Yes.
Right.
This is actually true. And it's almost always true, right? And there's almost always, you know, 1%, 2%, 3% of what's going on in your business where you chop it off. Ow, amputation. And all of a sudden, everything gets better. I mean, I've had this conversation with so many people. You know, like I was talking to a bunch of CPAs at a seminar, and I said, I am giving you permission to politely, diplomatically fire a customer. How many of you know who it is already right now without even running a spreadsheet? And they're like, these hands kind of go up, like, get rid of them. You are not obligated. And again, you can do it nicely. You can say, we did a year-end review, and we are changing the direction of our business. And unfortunately, we need to close a number of customer accounts. And I've got this list of other accountants that I think would be very good for you, and we'll do our best to help you, you know, transfer all the information over, and it's been really great. Let's have coffee sometime, but you know, we just can't service this business anymore.
Right. You know, it's interesting. At one point, I invested quite a bit in different domain names. And I still do. I like to play around with domain names, and you build a one-page website, and you build some traffic to it, and then you can sell that kind of like a digital real estate. You can sell it for sometimes it can be very lucrative. What's interesting is if you got to a certain level of domain names, I buy my stuff through GoDaddy, then you would be allowed or permitted to have your own personal salesperson who would help you and work with you. If you didn't reach that volume, then you just you know, you were in the general public, you know, and it, my point being to all that is you either have to fire your customers, kind of like what you're talking about, or you create a different level of not activity, of service for them. Something has to go, either your quality has to change for that particular customer, or best case scenario, you just let them go in a loving, diplomatic, caring way, as you suggest, because sometimes these are problematic, high maintenance clients that no matter what you do are not going to be happy.
That's right. And you know, let's zoom in on something you just said. You talked about like having that higher level of service. So there's a chapter in my book called the Starbucks principle of the $2,700 espresso machine. And in my book, I have a tool. Well, it's at 8020curve.com. The book kind of explains how to use the tool, but allows you to see how much different customers will actually spend on stuff. And you can put numbers in that tool. So let's say you got a Starbucks and it gets 10,000 customers a month. And they all spend at least $1.40 because that's the least amount of money you can buy a cup of coffee for at Starbucks, right? Well, 80-20 says that here's a rule of thumb. Like, write this down. If you write this down and understand it, it will be worth the last five Money for Lunch shows that you listen to, I promise, okay?
All right, I'm going to write it down, so go ahead.
One-fifth of people will spend four times the money.
Say that again.
One-fifth the people, 20% of the people, will spend four times the money.
Okay.
That is 80-20 applied to pricing. So what does that mean? It means that for every five people that will spend $1, one of them will spend four. For every five that will spend $4, one of them will spend 16. Well, if you work that out, what you'll get from 10,000 Starbucks customers, 80-20 predicts that one of them a month would spend $3,000. And now you go, how is anybody going to spend $3,000 at Starbucks? Well, go to Starbucks and you'll see. They sell a German stainless steel, gorgeous, you know, fruity espresso maker, right? And if you have an itch for espresso, you can scratch it with, you know, for $2.90, or you can scratch it for $2,900. And,
right.
And 80-20 guarantees you that one out of 10,000 will spend $2,700. And
now,
it predicts that store will sell one of those machines every month. And if you run the profitability on it, you're like, whoa, if we
right.
didn't sell this espresso machine, it would totally mess up our numbers.
Now, here's what I like. First of all, you refer to it as 80-20. And you're not saying I predict or my team has calculated this. 80-20 predict. So I like that. You're leaving it completely
yeah.
to the 80-20 rule, not the Perry Marshall rule, but the 80-20
mm-hmm.
rule.
Mm-hmm.
And I like this idea that 20% will spend four times the money. That kind of gives you a lot of working room there. I mean, that's to me is a tremendous insight there. And again, guys, because we're getting close on time, it's called, the book again is 80-20 Sales and Marketing. One of my favorite areas, one of my favorite chapters is the one that you talk about hiring. And real quick, you talk about when you bring somebody on board, this is specifically the salespeople, but it works for anybody. You bring them on board on a trial basis. Okay, a lot of people do that, but if, again, if you've never done this, this is a great way to really start somebody off. You bring them on a trial basis. And here's a philosophy that I like, Perry, that I think that everybody should really buy into this philosophy, and that is hiring should be an audition, not an interview.
Amen, brother. You know,
I love that.
My kids are in theater, and my oldest son is in a band. You know, in theater, if they're doing Hamlet, they would never sit you down in a chair and talk to you about Hamlet for an hour. They put you on the stage and they give you a script and they say, go, right? And if
yes.
you want to be a bass player in a band, you bring your bass, you plug it into the amp and you play, right? Well, hiring people for any business should be the same. And when we hire people, we don't talk to them at all. We give them these little jobs, like even online. We'll create these little online jobs, and only after they complete the job will we even talk to them. Audition, not interview.
I love it. I love it. Listen, we're out of time, Perry. I would love to bring you back, talk more about 80-20. And there's just so many nuggets in here. The book, again, is 80-20, available at Amazon or wherever good books are sold, by Perry Marshall, 80-20 Sales and Marketing. Perry Marshall, my friend, good to have you back. Hope to have you back soon.
Thank you for having me on the show. Have a blessed day. Take care.
You too, buddy. Good stuff there from Perry Marshall. The 80-20 rule works in everything. Check it out. Ever since I've read this book, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, I look at everything differently, and it helps you make different decisions. You start looking at your employees differently. You start looking at your sales differently. I would advise you that 80-20 should be part of your trainings, part of your library of resources. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.